The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio. So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, M-E-E-audio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly named podcast series. But the important part is, of course, the QA. We're going to jump into some question and answer. We're doing it live. Twin Folk Tech, we're doing it live. We got 2Turbo and Mr. TK Bay in the chat saying, let's go. So we're going to jump right in. Happy Monday morning. Good morning. I'm so glad that you decided to join me to kick off your tech week. This is apparently going to be a pretty busy tech week. There was a lot that kind of happened over the last week, and it's why I like to hold my podcast on a Monday. It gives us a little time to kind of sort out our feelings on the tech stories from the last week, and maybe some news is breaking. We've got to stay on top of this. Dave Burns, thank you so much. But I'm bumping up those numbers, but I'm just lurking this week. Well, I'm glad you could drop by and just say hey. Everyone say hey to Dave. And then we've got Sveticus, Juan, OMG, what's up, buddy? I've been a min for me, but glad I'm able to make it today. I'm glad you could jump in, too. Thanks for popping on by, Sveticus. So, yes. This week is going to have a lot of activity, a lot of chatter. Samsung has an Unpacked event this week. Last week was the launch of the OnePlus 10T, which I still have not played with, but we've also been digging into some other phones like the iQOO 9T, which is sort of the cousin, the international cousin of the OnePlus 10T. And then we've just got a bunch of news stories that I wasn't expecting would be popping up this high on sort of tech news radar. So I hope you had a lovely weekend. I hope you got some downtime. Hope you got some rest. I'm going to try and keep this one a bit more efficient. And I've really enjoyed some of those conversations we've gotten into in the gadget block where if there are any questions that you guys have, or you want to chat out specific topics, you know, phones, benchmarks, I've been playing Pixel 6a. I did a Pixel 6a. Well, I'll save that for the housekeeping. We're going to run housekeeping here in just a sec. I've even updated one of the largest Steam OS updates on my Steam Deck. There's just been a lot. It's been so much. Oh, Twin Folk Tech, you know that this is going to be the savior of all tech journalism, Twin Folk writes. Samsung can keep it packed. I don't want it, LOL. The only news worth talking about is Samsung news, right? I mean, why get a Pixel 6a when you can get a garbage A53? Oh, Gary the Fireman! Everyone say, hey, Gary. Gary saying, good morning, geeks, and Dustadore. Morning, folks. Can't stay long, but I'm here until I'm not. Again, I think like that's also kind of one of the themes this week. There's a lot going on, not just in the world of tech. It seems like a number of folks out there are also like juggling a little Twitch streaming with some work. So much appreciated those of you who are just kind of popping on in and keeping the stream going. All right, why don't we knock out a little housekeeping here? Keep this rolling. It's 9:03 Pacific time, 9:03 in the AM. Welp Omdam is just saying sup, what's up? ER1980 saying good evening all from a very warm TK. Very warm UK, because TK also commented right after that. So ER1980 is not living in TK Bay. That's the thing. That came out real weird. Oh, Dustadori's waiting to hear back about an interview at UCSD. Hey, very nice. All right. Best of luck, and I'm sending out good vibes for your potential employment, it sounds like. Oh, Gary the Fireman, it's warm everywhere, but man, the UK got hit pretty hard, so I hope everybody out there is staying cool. I hope you're not having any of the issues with, like, you know, aircon or power or any of the issues that some of our states here are facing. So, jumping into a little housekeeping, like I said, this has been a busy couple of weeks. It feels like I've just been barely keeping all the balls in the air, trying to juggle reviews and editorials and some of the work that I've been doing on other channels. Here, let me get this queued up. Screen share, which I'm going to scroll back down. So last week's podcast was pretty killer, and we definitely had like a little homage to Nichelle Nichols. Kicking off this week, this was a major video for me to put together, and it was really difficult cutting together an e-bike review while we were in the middle of like a pretty bad heat wave. Again, I was trying to record the commentary for this video, and it was like high 90s, and even my Lumix, even my Panasonic cameras would give me high temperature warnings. So I ended up having to record most of the video in the gadget lab, which sucks for an e-bike, but man, it's tough. There are so many of our electronics that really aren't rated for long use out in the field. This was the OneBot S2 e-bike. It's still currently in crowdfunding, so they're putting up an Indiegogo campaign. And there, if you click on my video, or if you hit like the blog post that I put together on somegadgetguy.com, they set up a special sneak preview private affiliate link. So if you were in the market for shopping a cute little e-bike, something that can kind of just zip you around town, it's super easy to pack up and travel with, there's an additional private link that can save you a little cash on an e-bike purchase. Immediately after that, both TK and I this last week finished up our reviews on the Surface Laptop Go 2. So this is Microsoft's sort of student-grade laptop, which I was very impressed with the build quality on this little laptop. And it's kind of charmed as one of the most portable laptops I think I've ever used or ever reviewed. I also got to spend some time outdoors listening to the Soundcore Motion Boom Plus, a rugged Bluetooth boombox of a Bluetooth speaker. But now I need to follow up with Soundcore because apparently my speaker is facing an issue with how the subwoofer cones might pop out in hot weather. So I might need to follow up this video now that I've learned a little about how this speaker should function. And lastly, this was kind of a big video to wrap up last week. This isn't lastly. This is second to last. This is the penultimate for housekeeping. Pixel 6a popularity and toxic review trends. I am wrapping up hold on. So let me get this back here. There we go. I am wrapping up a finished Pixel 6a review. The folks at reviews.org wanted to talk about the Pixel 6a sort of in this window of back to school, you know, the back to school tech and gadget purchases here. And so instead of putting my personal Pixel 6a review on my own channel, it's going to be on reviews.org. I've got the main timeline cut. I'm just slapping some B-roll together. It's a 26-minute video. And it definitely digs into some of the issues that I think we face with the commentary on the Pixel 6a. And I have a number of concerns over who might be a good fit for the Pixel 6a. I don't think this is a one-to-one, easy-to-recommend phone if you're familiar with the Pixel 4a or the Pixel 5a. So there's a lot of commentary. I need time. The video is 26 minutes long for a good reason. But before I put that video out there, I really wanted to kind of revisit. This is like an ongoing conversation. If you're a fan of the podcast, you've heard me complain about this stuff numerous times in the past. But as a standalone video, it's just getting exhausting having to deal with people that are fans of other larger channels, but they come and then they like complain about me criticizing other review trends. Oh, but so-and-so didn't say they hated the phone, so why are you criticizing their review style? And you're like, there's data here that we need to unpack on how brief a window some of these phones get, the popularity, the search metrics. We've got to untangle this if we really want our hobby to be representative of the people that enjoy this hobby. And that's what's frustrating, is like you spend all this time and effort and energy kind of talking about these phones, but someone with a channel with like 5 million subscribers on it has just completely blown the window. And now you've got to spend all your time like defending your own opinions because they've got an army of sycophants that leave terrible comments on your videos. And again, this type of conversation comes up, it's like the least genuine, the least earnest kinds of show me examples of when people have reviewed phones poorly. And you're like, well, and then you're not paying attention. All you're doing is trying to exhaust me, because there's nothing I can say that's going to change your bias about the channels you like. But you're going to sit here and try and criticize when I've been showing my work and I've been trying to join this conversation in earnest. So, that geeky rant got some good traffic. Again, it's YouTube is all about sort of hate watching and drama. The videos that talk about the drama of making videos increasingly seem to get better attention from YouTube in their early launch than just talking about the tech. This is how we know a genre of content is starting to die on social media. Increasingly, the videos that dig into the drama of talking about tech, as opposed to just talking about tech, are more easily popularized on this platform. YouTube is destroying our hobby. If you care about tech, if you're just really into tech, it is so much harder to just find good content talking about SoC design, talking about improvements to operating systems, about digging into the nuts and bolts of mobility and phones and cool gear. We have some great outlets with things like Gamers Nexus and Hardware Unboxed. If you're into monitor technology, laptop technology, GPU and CPU benchmarking, there are some phenomenal resources. If you're really into phones, man, it's getting hard to kind of rise above that noise. So it really is a bummer seeing what this is doing and how a select few number of people are profiting in the extreme at kind of the expense of everybody else's channels. And they're not really contributing to the community, they're kind of usurping, they're kind of pulling from the community. And I feel if we don't push back on those trends, then those of us who just genuinely love this stuff are going to find, man, my hobby's dead. It's really a bummer. So, Twin Folk Tech had a comment here. You got some people who are in the YouTube tech community make long-form adverts for Apple and Samsung, and then you have channels like yours that actually aim to inform consumers. So here's... Before we get into the last bit of housekeeping, I mean, housekeeping's going pretty efficiently, so let's derail housekeeping here for just a second. I feel like I need to create a new channel advert. Like a new, you know, hey, what is my channel all about? You know, when you first visit a YouTube channel, I haven't done anything like that in two Gadget Labs. It was two Gadget Labs ago that I did that. Especially over the pandemic, I think I figured out a little bit better what I want my niche to be. And I purposely want my niche to be much smaller than a general consumer electronics channel. I do not care to talk to average consumers. If they stumble upon my videos or if they happen upon my videos, I don't want to be outright hostile to someone who isn't super tech savvy, but that's not really the audience I'm courting. I'm trying to talk to more broadly minded tech enthusiasts. I want to talk about higher level use, and I want to talk to people who feel like they're the folks that help make purchasing decisions in their family, in their circles of friends, and I want to better prepare them for those types of interactions with their family. That is a super narrow demographic. That is not average. That's not basic. That's not big numbers. That's who I'm trying to reach. If you want to nerd out on some fun toys and you want to help inform your family and friends, like, you're the type of person who asks your parents, what is it that you do on your phones? And then you actually listen to what they have to say. That would be the person I want to talk to, not the person who thinks they're a tech enthusiast because they memorize specs off of GSM Arena, but then always somehow manage to come to the conclusion that only two brands should ever be seriously considered for their family or friends. That's not a tech enthusiast. That's a brand advocate, and that's fine. I feel like you can still do some fun stuff while being a brand advocate, so long as we're all honest about what that looks like. So I think I need to, like, spell that out much more directly. You know, it's not like I'm saying don't come to my channel if you're an average consumer, but understand the kind of conversation that I'm hoping to have should be much higher level than just, I don't know, do you just, like, open the TikTok on your phone and watch YouTube? Then this $1,000 phone is the best way to do it, because that's harmful to consumers out there. I just got another comment. Someone dropped me a comment on my Motorola Edge Plus full review. If you hadn't noticed, I caught it on one deal website, courtesy of another deal website, while I'm currently doing work for Slick Deals. The Moto Edge Plus 2022, one of the most brutally high performance phones of this year, one of the most capable and inexpensive productivity focused phones, was on sale for like $499. This is a phone that launched at $999, was regularly on sale for $899, goes toe to toe and crushes the S22 and S22 Plus. And at $899, you could get it with 512 gigs of storage, was just on sale for $400 less. So I've been getting some comments. Some interest has popped up on the Edge Plus. But someone dropped me a comment and was like, hey, literally all I do is watch video online, and I kind of poke around on social media. This is a really great deal on the phone, but, like, should I get this phone? And I still kind of feel like maybe no, because if you have this screamer, high performance, productivity focused device, even at $499, if all you're doing is covering the basics, you're not gonna have the best experience. Your battery life is gonna tank. Whereas if you spent like $399 on a more proper mid-ranger, medium power solution, you would be able to do all of those activities longer than if you were using the Moto Edge Plus. Just streaming video and the screen brightness and the CPU and GPU compute power and all these other things, even a really good deal on a flagship phone might not be the best solution for your needs. And that's what's frustrating. So that's the kind of conversation I want to have. I want to talk to people who probably won't ever buy a mid-ranger for themselves, but understand and are comfortable recommending the right fit phones to their family and friends. So it's tough. Like, I need to do a better job of spelling that out. Ooh, JMX Warrior saying, hey, hey, and he's got the Coral Pixel 6 coming this week. Congratulations on the new phone. Twin Folk Tech, it's just annoying when folks who are brand advocates try to pass off their coverage of other devices as objective, even though there's a clear slant to their commentary. And again, people aren't going to hunt around on YouTube. They're going to, oh, this guy's got like 10 million subscribers. He must know what he's talking about. They're not going to dig any deeper than that. And so if someone there is trying to claim, oh, I'm a totally fair reviewer, but somehow magically Samsung always wins. Unless Samsung's pitted up against an iPhone, and then somehow magically the iPhone always wins. They're not going to scratch the surface on that any deeper. And it does such a huge, huge disservice to this community. Someone is going to hear, buy the Samsung, then they're going to go to their carrier store, and they're going to buy the cheapest Samsung that they can. Because that's been sold to them as Samsung is the betterer. And then they'll see, oh, I can get a real good deal on a Samsung. And then they get it, and it's an A53, and it's hot garbage. And then they're not going to dig any deeper than that. They're not going to say, oh, this one phone was a poor representation of what Android could be, even at a medium cost savings. Maybe I should try another Android phone. They're going to say, I already tried the bestest Android because Samsung is the bestest. Better get an iPhone. And then they're going to say, man, my iPhone 13 was so much better than this Galaxy A53. And you're like, yeah, the iPhone 13 is an $800 phone and the Galaxy A53 is a terrible example of what Android can be at like $399. So this is we've been facing this kind of casual consumer misrepresentation since like the early days of PCs. I had an aunt that was like, man, my new Mac is so much better than my Dell. And you're like, well, what was your Dell? My Dell was a five-year-old Dell laptop that I got for $399 on a sale. And my new MacBook is a $1,500 brand spanking new machine. But Macs are better than PCs. And like, all of the marketing. I don't have enough viewership to undo generations of marketing that, you know, Apple's been spending billions of dollars a year making people feel good about their brand. Which we do have an article about Apple not maybe living up to their marketing there. Gabaletta, I recently had conversations with my brother about him wanting a new computer to do stuff on it, and everything he described can be done on a phone. In his mind, phones are still phones, and anything that requires higher compute power, you need a PC, even if the phone is just as powerful or as effective as doing the same tasks. But he just couldn't fathom that his phone can tackle everything he described that he wanted to do. And this is, again, because if you listen to some of these larger YouTubers, phones are for phone things, and there's been no attempt to try and do something else. Like, I can hold up this $1,300 Xiaomi 12S Ultra, and if you're not trying to do something new with $1,300 worth of phone, then you're going to end up with a poorer experience than if you bought a Pixel 6a. Legit. It will be bad for you to spend that much money. Ditya, yeah, but why spend $499 on a Motorola when I can spend $1,800 on a folding plastic screen? Yeah, it's tough. Twin Folk Tech, the Moto Edge Plus is beautiful, but it's so much more useful than just a content consumption device. The cameras are badass and the performance was insane. I loved Ready 4 and was blown away by those charging speeds. It is not a casual phone. It really isn't. Moto makes some decent sort of lower cost, especially MVNO, you know, low cost carrier options. They're great. Big, huge batteries, low power SoC, probably only going to get a year of operating system updates. But like, you will save money. You'll be able to use those phones for 2, maybe 3 days of casual use. I really don't think the person who's trying to just cover the basics is going to enjoy the experience of a hot rod premium tier device as much as a longer lived daily driver. So in kind of keeping with that, I've been playing around with some of the formatting and with some of the content that used to go to my blog versus YouTube versus the Patreon. I used to make them into videos. No one really wanted to watch the videos. I started writing them up on the blog. They do very little traffic on the blog. So I'm moving this series. Whenever I collect my performance testing, I call it By the Benchmarks. And so the By the Benchmark series is now going to go to Patreon, patreon.com/somegadgetguy. And I did sort of a double whammy for this last installment. I finished up my benchmarking on the Pixel 6a and on the iQOO 9T. So we've got a beautifully high performance, sort of around a $600-ish iQOO against a $450 Pixel 6a. We've got the newest Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1 high performance, better efficiency X1 core, or the X2 core? Is that what that's? I've already forgotten what big core is in that phone, against the Tensor in the Pixel 6a. And so obviously, you know, we've got like the Geekbench and stuff, but we did the video rendering, we did the audio mixdown, we did CPU and batch photo processing. This is a pretty brutal slate of tests, and you can see how they all stack up against all of the other 8 Gen 1 phones, and a couple little mid-rangers. So I've got the iQOO Neo 6, which had the Snapdragon 870, and the Poco X4 GT, which had the Dimensity 8100. So this is the full collection. This is the full breakdown on all of that. Yeah, there's a lot. I'm not going to spoil all of like the conclusions that I come to, but two very happy trends. The 8 Plus Gen 1. So I've got two phones that are 8 Plus Gen 1. I've got the iQOO 9T, and I've got the Xiaomi 12S Ultra. A $1,300 phone and a roughly $600 to $650 phone. And I'm very happy to see some of the trends in the 8 Plus Gen 1. It still performs like an 8 Gen 1. If you got an 8 Gen 1 phone at the beginning of the year, I wouldn't be too upset about this mid-year refresh. The mid-year refresh is giving us just a little bit more headroom on CPU-bound tasks. You're going to get a little bit better battery life on an 8 Plus versus an 8, but on the whole, this is still a big laptop-grade, super-thirsty, powerful SoC. We can drive the 8 Plus Gen 1 a little bit harder on CPU tasks. We've got just a little bit better thermals for gaming. It's not revolutionary. It is evolutionary. I wouldn't be upset if you were rocking like a OnePlus 10 Pro and you see this OnePlus 10T. The 10T is going to get you a little bit better battery life. The 10 Pro is still a screamer. It's still a monster performer. Same thing. We were just talking about the Moto Edge 2022. All of these phones, we've just got to be very specific about what you're trying to accomplish and how you're breaking all of those costs down. Pitting a $650 8 Plus Gen 1 against a $450 Tensor really showcases again how poorly techies have commented on what Tensor can really do. Tensor in the Pixel 6a has set new records in two of my more mainstream video editing tasks. And that is remarkable. This is a $450 phone that is significantly outperforming my $1,300 Xiaomi 12S Ultra into of the more consumer style video editing tests. That is gorgeous. I'm getting glimmers of the Pixel 4 and Pixel 4 XL. People would look at the Geekbench score and say, oh, but it's not getting as good a score in Geekbench as my Samsung can. It must not be as powerful. And then you would really use the Pixel 4 and it would crush real world tasks. The Pixel 4 XL is still capable of hanging with 888s. Like, it was generations ahead in terms of chewing up audio and video data. That thing was an absolute monster. And people slept on it. Oh, but the Geekbench score not as good. Bigger number better. Tensor is doing something very similar. When Google said, like, oh, well, we're not really fixated on getting the highest benchmarking scores, a lot of us techies rolled our eyes. In real-world use, this $450 phone, and in part thanks to the fact that it's only running a 60 hertz display, it's even more performant than its bigger brother phones. I want everybody to say, hey, tech-loving mama. She's throwing the heart eyes and a little wave and a little heart. It's good times. Oh, yeah, McCorkran is saying, I'm very excited by early battery reports for the 8 Plus Gen 1. Again, I mean, like, it's really difficult to quantify because if you use an 8 Gen 1 for what an 8 Gen 1 does well, you're going to eat that battery. This is, like I said, it's an almost laptop-grade chip in your phone. I would assume maybe somewhere in the ballpark of around 8% on daily driver tasks. That's maybe the sort of generous window that I would, if I'm looking at like specific, you know, high load applications, if I'm really using these phones in a much more communication, social media, lots of messaging, that kind of a use. The numbers that I'm seeing, I would say the window is probably somewhere around 8%. If you could configure two phones exactly the same way, but you had an 8 Gen 1 in one phone and an 8 Plus in another, not extreme, but again, 8, maybe 10% extra battery life in casual use like that, no one would complain. That is a nice perk. And when we talk about this isn't a new chip, it's a refresh. I'm down for that. TSMC fabbing the 8 Plus Gen 1. This is better. This is definitely better. Oh, and Gary the Fireman. I love having my 4XL around to play with. I still have my Panda Pixel 4XL, and I love trotting it out. From time to time, you still fire that thing up, and it was so ahead of the rest of the pack, thanks to just a little extra Google custom hardware. It still drives me crazy because, again, we let tech commentators, oh, but the Pixel and Google never does anything right. How come it doesn't have expendable storage? And if I could take all of those people and just shake them, because the 4XL was an absolute beast.
Hey, folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on rglowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
Oh, Gabaletta saying the Snapdragon 855 and the 865 were awesome, still are for a balanced package. There's nothing that's in daily driver use. You can pick up Snapdragon 855 today, and it's still ridiculous overkill for most people's needs. I mean, I can definitely stress an 855 where I can feel it. I mean, I've got my Surface One right here, and you're like, yeah, the 855 in here is still great. This is still a great tablet-y experience. I can feel it when I'm trying to do things that I now take for granted on my Pixel
6A. For best of our week and for this show, I'm almost exclusively doing my podcast mixdowns on my phones. I get the little pop-up or an alert, hey, you can download the video from your stream, you can cut the audio, you can do all this, and it's already in my email, so I just go boop, and it's on the phone, and I run it through Audio Evolution. It actually compresses and mixes down the audio faster on my phone than it does on my Threadripper. And then I'm already connected to the internet, and I just upload it right back up to Pinecast, and that's how the audio version of the podcast gets finished. And like, that is so much faster than sitting down and being in my workstation. Like, I've done podcast mixdowns while going to pick up my daughter from day camp. You know, hey, Marie and I, we want to run some errands. While I'm in the car, let me push render, and my phone is chewing up that podcast, and I don't have to wait until I'm in front of a PC again. It's crazy how fast, how performant this stuff really is. So all of the news, all of the articles, everything we're going to be talking about can be found on this week's show notes, somegadgetguide.com for this week's podcast, episode 262. We're going to jump into the news block now because I spent way too long getting sidetracked in housekeeping. But I was really excited by how those performance numbers came out. There were some real early concerns. Google making their own SoC, is it just going to be another Exynos? Tensor is a completely different animal, and it performs in a very different way than a Qualcomm does, than a Snapdragon does, but man, is it not an Exynos. Boy, howdy, is this not the kind of performance characteristics we would see from a Samsung SoC? Google is doing much better, even with Samsung fabbing the chip, not an Exynos. Anyone who says that, you have my permission to ignore them for the rest of your life and roll your eyes so hard that you might potentially dislocate an eyeball. Because they are telling you they don't know anything about tech. And it's okay to listen to them and believe them. So when you hear, oh, but Tensor's basically just an Exynos, then they have advertised to you how bad they are at looking at technology and comparing different types of smartphone solutions. ER1980, turn it into a t-shirt, not an Exynos. I'm real bad about designing t-shirts, but maybe that needs to be a coffee mug. I'm okay at making the occasional coffee mug. All right, just a little heads up, a little forewarning. It always makes me anxious and cranky when we see, like, no one blink at a major acquisition. No one, like, got in the way of this. One enormous amoeba of a mega corporation bought out another bigger brand. And we should face some scrutiny on these kinds of purchases. No one cared. It just became a headline and vanished almost as quickly in like the news cycle. Amazon buys Roomba company, will now map the inside of your house. In the article, this is from Motherboard, written up by Matthew Galt. Mega corporation Amazon has expanded its empire of data capturing devices by spending $1.7 billion purchasing beloved maker of vacuum robots and former beloved maker of Warzone robots, iRobot, which makes the Roomba. In addition to tidying up, Roombas are also great at mapping the interior of your home and creating marketable data for its parent company. That is not a small acquisition. I know there has been this, like, this explosion in home automation, home robotic tech. There are any number of iRobot clones now, like Roomba clones. And again, I feel like iRobot kind of shot themselves in the foot because don't they have like a weird subscription service to the Roomba now? Like, you don't just buy it, you've got to buy it and get this data package and all this other stuff. It's incredible. $1.7 billion is not chump change for a brand that's so narrowly focused on home automation products. And Amazon just snatched them up. And no one, like, no one blinked. It totally fine. Totally fine. This is now an Amazon brand. Cool, I guess. All right? Fine. And this is the kind of thing, like, when we talk about an anti-competitive landscape and anti-consumer business practices, losing competition because a company with, like, a $1 trillion market cap can just hoover up any other smaller brands that they want at any time, this is what we're talking about. This is what's bad for consumers and what's bad for competition. It's absolutely astounding that there was no pushback on any of this. Just absolutely crazy. Gary the Fireman, Roombas for all. I mean, if Amazon wanted to send me one because I'm a Prime subscriber, I guess, but it's kind of nuts. Like, even my wife, we had this conversation, like, do we want to do another Prime subscription? And we're actually considering maybe not. I mean, a lot of the stuff that we watch through Amazon Prime is a subscription through another service. Like, we're constantly streaming PBS Kids through Amazon Prime. That's where we paid for our PBS Kids subscription. That's not a part of Prime. We could probably walk away from Prime. I don't know. It's crazy. Dustadore, hashtag some solid vacuum pun guy. Another quick story. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because it's such a farce of our legal system, but we do have to check in on the ongoing shenanigans of one Mr. Elon Musk as he fights the courts and his own bad judgment in trying to buy his own social media platform. This is coming by way of Ars Technica. The incredible John Brodkin wrote this up. I would highly recommend giving John a follow on Ars Technica. I absolutely adore his write-ups on tech politics. Twitter says Musk spam analysis used tool that called... Oh, wait, I have to read this headline again. Twitter says Musk's spam analysis used tool that called his own account a bot. Apparently, Elon Musk is a bot on Twitter. Twitter yesterday slammed Elon Musk's response to the company's lawsuit in a 127-page filing in the Delaware Court of Chancery that says Musk's claims are, quote, contradicted by the evidence and common sense. Twitter's court filing also said Musk's spam analysis relied on a tool that once called his own Twitter account a likely bot. So when Musk is out there talking about how Twitter's numbers are totally fake and there are so many more bots and we ran our own analysis and you can see these are all bots, that's, I mean, yeah. Apparently their sniffer is maybe a little too strict at calling real people Twitter accounts bots. Or it could just be that Musk's Twitter account really is just run by a bot. Maybe he's just got it set up to try and post the hot takes and tasty memes, and he himself is gaming the system as he's accusing others of trying to manipulate Twitter data. So that could also be it. Yeah, Aditya Anil, Musk got musked. Ha ha. Again, whatever the outcome of this, it's starting to feel like Alien versus Predator. Like, no matter who wins, I feel like the damage to Twitter is just going to be, like, unsurvivable. Increasingly, I really feel like even my own Twitter use is basically just going to be automated. I still mostly, like, kind of interact with other people that I know personally through DMs, and I'll occasionally post some stuff publicly, and then I, like, share my own videos and articles and stuff. It's getting rough out there for social media. I would give anything for the return of MySpace. Like, classic, old school, gotta know some HTML MySpace. I would be so happy if we could go back to that. Twin Folk, hot takes, tasty memes, and market manipulation. It's the American way. All right, This one I wanted to spend just an extra minute on because it is near and dear to my heart. This is a trend. Everybody in this chat, everybody right here, right now, I need your help. Mobile gaming is a cesspool of bad gambling mechanics. If you just go to the Apple App Store or you just go to Google Play and you're not signing up for Google subscriptions or Apple Arcade, it is extremely difficult to get good information on the types of in-app purchases in those games. There is a universe of difference between a developer who makes a game, lets you play the first mission of that game for free, and then has like a $4.99 unlock so that you can get the rest of the game, versus, a terrible slot machine, gotcha, gambling mechanic, riddled, infested, multiple in-game currencies with cooldown clocks and gems and coins, and you've got to buy all of these different packages, and you can spend hundreds a month just to keep up with the basic speed of the game. Both of those are called games with in-app purchases. Google makes no distinction between simple unlock to buy the full version of the game versus spend thousands as a whale and still not keep up with, you know, the player versus player, the meta of that game. Game subscriptions can help us minimize some of that damage. I think it's very interesting, and I really hope Netflix can continue on this track, but right now, the early data is not looking good for Netflix gaming. This is coming by Jose Adorno. Less than 1% of Netflix subscribers are playing its games. Sorry, that's Jose from 9 to 5 Mac. Less than 1%. Netflix is trying to diversify its income as the company launched last year a video game catalog for iOS and Android users. While the streaming service already offers 24 games and plans to add 26 more by the end of the year, a study showed that less than 1% of its subscribers are playing the games. McCorkran, I gotta make fun of you, bud. I gotta tag you on this. See, this is the kind of tech apathy we gotta avoid, right? So McCorkran writes, do they have any good games? I didn't even know they were out yet. And Dave Burns, finally, I am the 1%. Oh, man, that's great. So here, I'm gonna pull up Google Play and Android apps and games. And we're just going to pull up Netflix. Whoops. I should have prepped this before, but we're going to fire this up here. I've got to get to the Netflix Inc. We're sorry, the requested URL was not found on the server. That is awful. Hold on. Come on. All right. I might need to go into my Netflix account. Google will not let me open Netflix as a developer. Where you would most easily find all of the Netflix games. They actually live on Google Play, but then they verify your account on Netflix, and that's how you play the game. All right, I guess we got to go to Netflix. That was a terrible exercise in our app stores letting us down. And I don't even know if I can pull up the games list on... Man, this is really going to be annoying. Wow. Oh, that's rough. Hold on, I got to see if I can maybe come at this sideways. Into the breach. Let's try that. Netflix Inc. Open it in a new window. We're sorry, the requested URL cannot be found on the server. What the heck? Oh, that's so annoying. I can't show you Netflix games list on a PC web browser. What is going on? Holy cow. Okay. I'll pull it up on a phone just so I can read you the names. I do want to show this one. This was a recent addition to the Netflix catalog. Into the Breach is an incredible turn-based strategy sci-fi combat game. And now the official Android version of it is on Netflix. This game is flipping phenomenal. It's really good. I've got to make sure dang it. Hold on. Because of my screen formatting, I don't know if it'll play in the window here, but I'm going to mute. And now you should be able to see it right there. So like a little Advanced Wars, but alien bugs trying to take over the planet. And you've got units and you've got to be able to defend your territories. Phenomenal pixel art. I mean, it just feels like Super Nintendo to Nintendo DS, kind of in that window of some of the best Game Boy Advanced kinds of strategy games. I flippin' love it. This is like an indie sweetheart in the world of PC gaming. It is exclusive to Android and iOS through Netflix Gaming, and it's great. The mobile port for this is fantastic. It's really good. And again, no ads, no extra fees. That's the whole point. We're setting up a game catalog that you subscribe to Netflix. If you're subscribed to Netflix, you don't have to do anything else to get these games. You just have to go to your Netflix and you say, hey, I want to install this game. And it takes you to Google Play and you install the game from there. So here is the current list. Because a bunch of games have recently been added. I've got to just kind of read them off here. All the mobile games. So, Point P is, are you not going to tell me the developer? Man, this is going to be really difficult. Point P is a cute little, like, sort of a doodle jump, kind of hopping game. You don't have to worry about anything with, like, cooldown clocks or other mechanics. Moonlighter is a pretty decent, how do you want to describe it? It's like a combination of city management and RPG adventure. So you've got elements that are sort of city planning, and then it'll go into sort of a top-down Legend of Zelda style action combat. Flippin' great game. Obviously, one of the first, they had like a little pixel art RPG for Stranger Things. So it's Stranger Things 3, the game. So it's kind of based on the third season of Stranger Things. We're already into the fourth season. When a lot of people were making fun of Netflix Gaming, they were making fun of, like, there's Bowling Ballers, little bowling game. It's not that great. They had a domino game. They had and it wasn't terrible, but it's just like a solitaire poker game. So you've got these like ranks and you try and build better poker hands. Not a very complicated game. Those are the games that people started with Netflix for gaming. Now we've got things like Relic Hunters. Relic Hunters is a pretty good multiple character unlock, top-down twin stick shooter style adventure game. You're going through and you're shooting all these guys and you're building up your own crafting so you can make new weapons. You've got different kinds of weapons based on different elements. So some enemies are more affected by air weapons versus earth weapons, stuff like that. Really, really good. I pointed this out when I did this video on reviews.org, but do you have any family members who are really into like Candy Crush, right? Candy Crush style gem swapping games are some of the most predatory games on Google Play. Because if you don't get the map, if you don't get the board completed just right, you only have so many tries before then they start gouging you to buy extra gem packs or get different unlocks with coins. So there's a gem swap game on Netflix called Knittens. And eventually you will run into a cooldown. Like, hey, you haven't cleared this board. You're stuck here for a little bit. And you got to kind of wait for the game to sort of recycle for you. But there is no additional purchase. There is no like pay to unlock this new power up and then you can keep playing. Nothing to gouge you. You're in the game. Townsman is another sort of medieval strategy building game. Dungeon Dwarves is an okay sort of role-playing character adventure game. Arcanium is a very good collectible card action game. Like, just really, really good. It's in this in the vein of like a Slay the Spire, and it's a part of your Netflix subscription. But I also wanted to highlight one more. This is a game called Before Your Eyes. This was an incredible indie PC storytelling experience. It's not really a game. Before Your Eyes would have you set up on your computer. I want to say it was like a $15 game when it came out. But what it is, it's sort of like an interactive storytelling experience that tracks your eyes. So as you're following the life of these people, every time you blink, it moves you forward in time to another part of the story. And if you can't control your blinks, you miss things as part of the storytelling experience. And the whole story is built around people kind of growing up and having a family and sort of the regret or the unfulfilled expectations. And then it also has this mechanic of you as the observer, you don't get to just have this story handed to you. You might have to move through parts of the story, just like in real life. Like, there are times I turn around and Lex is like a full-grown person. She made her own breakfast today. That's scrambled eggs and toast, and she made a turkey sandwich for her lunch at day camp today, and she's six. It's going by way too fast. The official mobile port that uses the webcam on your phone to go through this storytelling experience is on Netflix. So if you are not, Michael Corcoran, if you are not paying attention to some of these new games that are getting released under the Netflix umbrella, you're missing out on a surprisingly robust mobile gaming catalog. Like, it's getting really good, and you don't have to do anything to experience any of these things. If you have a Netflix account, if you have a Netflix subscription, the games are just ready to go. And if you know other people who have Netflix, I'm sure you probably know some people in your circles of family and friends who love Netflix. They too will have probably a game in there that they'll really like. And again, it's ranging as simple as a teetering marble level game. I think that was the very first Netflix game that ever came out. And it's really not good. But there's someone out there, the only thing they want to do, they're waiting in line at the grocery store, and all they want to do is raise this little platform to keep a marble balanced in the middle of the platform until it goes into a special hole. Like, a game that would have been on Windows Mobile in, you know, pocket PCs on HTC devices like 15 years ago. That's all they want to play. Maybe that's it. Sure. But I'm really excited because they're going to be coming out with a chess game that is going to be player versus player. Of course, based on the Queen's Gambit, but I'm really excited to see if they can create their own little chess ecosystem. Because I'm terrible at chess, but I love to play. So that's where we're at. And it's really sad to me that Netflix has actually put in quite a bit of care. They've got really, really simple time-wasting games. They've got some reflex action games. They've got some classic arcade. Like, they've got a really good Breakout clone. You know, you just move a platform, a ball bounces, breaks bricks. Brick Breaker, you know, like, that's awesome. Then, they also have a very carefully cultivated collection of PC ports. Getting into RPGs, arcadey twin-stick shooters, action-adventure titles, and two very interesting storytelling experiences. They aren't games, but they're animated, interactive stories that are a part of this whole Netflix gaming setup. I am totally doing this selfishly. This podcast, not sponsored by Netflix. I want to have more of these games not be tied to terrible monetization practices on iOS and Android. I don't want terrible ads. I don't want terrible gacha mechanics. I don't want gambling mechanics in the games that my kid plays. I am asking, and in a little bit, I'm kind of begging. Tell people about what's going on there. Next time you're just hanging out, like, oh, hey, have you seen this game? Like, if you know people like to just kind of poke around on their phone or do some silly things on their phone, bring it up. Hey, do you have Netflix? Of course you do. Games. How much do the games cost? You already bought them. You already bought them. You might as well play them. Yeah. Oh, man. So I'm very impressed with the whole catalog. I mean, again, it's such a great spread. Sorry, I'm way behind on the chat here. So from Sore Hunter, some have Netflix at the beginning of the name while all are under the developer page. So on my phone, I can pull up Netflix as a developer on Google Play, but for some reason, in my web browser on my PC, Google will not let me just show you Netflix as a developer, which is super frustrating. Yeah, Gormlord. Moonlighter is a very good get, but I'm telling you, if you loved games like Advanced Wars and you haven't played Into the Breach, then you are really, really missing out. Because, man, oh God, is Into the Breach pretty good. Dave Burns, Juan, how could you even play games on a trash phone like a Pixel 6 series phone? Yeah, McCorkran, check them out, man. I just downloaded the Stranger Things game and some random adventure game. I wish Netflix had done more promotion, so I found out about it from them rather than from a Twitch stream. It's in the Netflix app, and all they did was just add a button down at the bottom, and that's not enough. Because I don't know about you guys, but I really don't interact with the Netflix app that much because I think the content discovery, like your search and how you find things on Netflix, is kind of trash. But because it's kind of trash, there's a whole button down at the bottom that I'm sure almost everybody is just ignoring. And it's really sad because now a part of your Netflix subscription is paying for some fantastic mobile gaming experiences. So Sore Hunter, I mean, look, okay, I agree with you because I love twin stick shooters. Sore Hunter says Relic Hunters is probably the best game in the whole Netflix catalog. I'm with you because I love those kinds of games. But if you like card games, Arcanium is really good. If you like turn-based strategy games, Into the Breach is really good. And as Netflix is a platform for streaming content, if we get more interactive stories like Before Your Eyes, that's going to be huge. That is such a good fit for Netflix. Like, my daughter loved the Choose Your Own Adventure Carmen Sandiego. So there's a series of Carmen Sandiego cartoons, but then they also did this really short Choose Your Own Adventure. So it's just one part of this mission. Carmen has to go and infiltrate this base and steal some relic or something like that. And it gives you choices. It's just like Bandersnatch, if you caught the, was it Black Mirror? Bandersnatch. My daughter loved that. She played through every single permutation of the choices that you could get just to see where every ending kind of wrapped up. Brilliant. Interactive storytelling Before Your Eyes is totally a part of that. Like, that I can't tell you just how good a fit that is for what Netflix is trying to do. So I'm doing this selfishly. I'm spending this time to make an advertisement for Netflix in the middle of my podcast because I want more of this and I don't want Netflix to give it up. And the only way, apparently, people are going to find out about this stuff is if we do some of the legwork for them. Please. Please just mention, like, oh, hey, yeah, check out your phone. They've got games. Yeah, Twin Folk Tech. Bowling Ballers is my favorite time waster game. My favorite time wasters from Netflix are that, I can't even remember what it's called. It's like Beach Casino or something like that. But it's a pretty good sort of poker solitaire. And then the Putt-Putt. There's a really good Putt-Putt game on Netflix. I mean, it's beautifully animated. It looks like an Annapurna game. It's really, really pretty. I understand the idea. Gabaletta says, I think Netflix should come out with its own separate app for this. Most people who use Netflix are not actively looking to play a game. I think their strategy makes sense because they want Netflix to be a subscription service. And as part of your subscription, most of that is content, but then they also add this thing called gaming. I can understand the Netflix executive idea on that. I feel like there's more of a pushback. Not a pushback. I feel like there's a higher barrier to awareness if there's a whole separate app that someone would need to install for Netflix gaming, as opposed to it just being a part of the Netflix app. And I think statistically they're looking at, hey, this is a part of the Netflix app and we hope people will eventually be curious enough to push the button there and go and check out what's there, as opposed to we've got Netflix for movies and TV and Netflix for gaming. How many people are really going to be motivated to install Netflix for gaming? This is still an early catalog. There's not a million options on this catalog. So I think in the early days, I think it makes more sense to it just being combined, and that hopefully this starts to pick up a bit more momentum from people who poke around and check things out. Well, stop doing that, Dustadore. I play a game called Kingdom Guard. It's a tower defense mixed with world map battle stuff, and every time they ask me to buy stuff, I invoke my rage against the machine and say, F you, I won't do it, you tell me. Or you could stop playing that game, which is trying to squeeze you for cash, and check out some other games that maybe are going to treat your time and money more respectfully. Oh, McCorkran, I'm not arguing with you. I completely agree there. McCorkran saying they should at least be promoting the Stranger Things game more aggressively. It's such a hugely popular show. No, yeah, I think we all agree there. I just went on this whole rambling tirade because Netflix has done very little to advertise their gaming outside of just their sort of Netflix streamer events. You know, like they do their whole like, hey, this season on Netflix, we're going to be putting out these shows and be expecting this content. Oh, and we got a couple games, but then the new Stranger Things is coming out. Like, that's it. That's the messaging. If you're not following the Netflix blog, Netflix writes a blog. I doubt anyone's really reading the Netflix blog, except for people like me who try to write up press releases. I think we all agree there. The issue is almost always an aspect of marketing and reaching out to consumers and making this stuff easier to find. But I also have higher expectations of us techies being able to occasionally check this stuff out and not just like, oh, Netflix does games. I tried that one game, which was just a marble game, and it was terrible. Well, yeah, that was 2 years ago. Like, that was at the beginning of the pandemic. What's changed is an incredible catalog of PC ports and other gaming experiences. So, I don't know. Gormlord, Netflix is in kind of a nosedive, though, at the moment. Do you think this will help much? I feel if Netflix is going to survive the streaming wars, diversifying their subscription makes a ton of sense. They are not a narrowly focused catalog like Crunchyroll. Sony bought Crunchyroll, and Crunchyroll basically absorbed like three other smaller anime streaming services, and now there's not really a good competitive counterpoint to Crunchyroll. There's some anime on HBO Max, there's some anime on Netflix. Crunchyroll is the anime streaming service. That is their narrowly defined genre of content and distribution. Netflix, as a streaming site, is a little all over the place. You don't go to Netflix for just one kind of content. And we totally accept that. We were talking about Amazon Prime. You sign up for Amazon Prime and you understand for this, like, what, $150 a year, whatever Amazon Prime is, I'm going to get streaming video and a little bit of streaming radio and some gaming stuff and some movie stuff and book stuff. And it's all just kind of bundled up with this package of, like, free shipping. We're totally fine spreading out Amazon Prime. Netflix is adding more things to the catalog, and people actually act like that's a bad thing. Like, I don't want to play for games I won't play. But you haven't looked at the catalog. There might be a game in there that you could really like. So what I feel Netflix should start doing is working out a deal with some kind of streaming audio service. Like, it would be really cool if for your premium Netflix subscription, you also got a free subscription to Tidal or Qobuz. And then just as a part of your Netflix account, you had streaming television, streaming movies, some fun games to play, some music, and Netflix became a catalog or a library of different kinds of entertainment and multimedia. I think if Netflix can do that, they can survive, because that is a value add that HBO can't just pounce on. The only other company that could really flip that would be like Disney Plus. Because Disney Plus could also start working developers to create their own game catalog. As soon as Netflix does it and they're successful, Disney Plus will probably copy it. So, you know, that I feel it's like a little bit more complicated than just, hey, do you think some games are going to save Netflix? I feel Netflix's strategy just needs to be broader than that. Dustadori, the only money I spend is on my Google Play, is from my Google Play rewards balance from surveys that I use for Pokemon Go. McCorkran, I didn't say you were hating Netflix. McCorkran says, I feel like Juan is accusing me of being anti-Netflix or something. All I said is that I didn't know that they had games out yet. No. You are putting that, that's just you. I was pointing out how you said, I don't even know if they have any good games. And you're asking me, when you have a Netflix app, and when I asked you to look at the Netflix app, you went and downloaded a game. I was accusing you of being that techie who wasn't curious enough on their own to poke on the games button. That's all I was putting on you. Completely agree with you. Advertising is a major issue with any new part of a product or service. So we have to see if Netflix can kind of catch up on that, on that kind of consumer awareness. So we're way long on the news block. This is one that I wanted to highlight because I feel Engadget did. This is a very stark turn, by the way. We're going from Juan likes fun games, please help support Juan's gaming addiction, to Actual's news story of people being hurt and of companies trying to retaliate against their own employees. So hold on one second, I just got to take another drink of water here because I'm running kind of dry.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hey, what's going on, Juan, and all of you tuned in to today's show. I'm Nick Gray from Fandroid. I've known Juan for quite a few years now, and you may have actually heard my voice from back in the day when Juan used to host the Pocket Now Weekly. If you're not familiar with Fandroid, we were actually the very first Android news site to hit the web, publishing our very first article within hours of Google making their announcement about their mobile operating system. Of course, a lot has changed since then, but we're still here covering the news, reviewing new gadgets, and of course, sharing our passion for Android with anyone who wants to join in. You can find all of our work on Fandroid.com. That's Phandroid.com. But if you love video, and I'm sure you do since you're listening to Juan's podcast, be sure to check us out at youtube.com/Fandroid as well. And that's going to do it. Juan, thanks for featuring us. Back to you.
This one's serious. Definitely needs to be handled with the appropriate tone. I'm not going to hit this too hard. I'd like you to start with the app, with the Engadget story. There's also a link to the Financial Times if you're subscribed to the Financial Times. They have an even more in-depth report on this issue. Companies spend a lot of money trying to create the image of their brand, and I feel Apple has generationally benefited from a certain flavor of corporate identity. And the more that we kind of get those peeks behind the curtain, it's not that Apple is anything magically different. This is a massive organization with lots of people in the mix, lots of cogs in the machine, and they don't always handle things the way that they should. And if we don't shine light on that, or if we're just like, oh, but you know, Apple's better than some other company when they do terrible things, those things don't get better for the people actually affected by it. So this was written up by Steve Dent over at Engadget. There we go. Report: Apple retaliated against women who complained about misconduct. Its corporate culture is at odds with the image it presents, multiple women said. From the first paragraph of the article, the Financial Times has published a lengthy report saying that Apple has fostered a culture of apathy toward reports of employee misconduct and has actively retaliated against staff members who complained about colleagues, including those who reported incidents of sexual assault. If accurate, the allegations are at odds with the image of inclusiveness that Apple projects and cast a pall on the real progress it has made in boosting its workforce diversity. Multiple women described filing complaints with Apple's Human Resources Department over sexual abuse, bullying, and other incidents. Former employee Megan Moore complained that a colleague removed her undergarments while she was asleep and took photos of her after a platonic night out. However, the HR representative called the experience, quote, a minor traffic accident. So this goes on. And it's kind of a tough read when you're getting through some of the reports and some of the quotes and some of the issues that these people have detailed. And for people having to sort of relive moments of abuse in their lives, only to then have Apple's incredible PR machine kind of push back against them. We are living in an age where a company with, what, Apple's over a $2 trillion market cap and spends billions a year advertising their image, it is very difficult for someone to stand up and say, hey, this happened to me. This was an experience that I suffered through. And the management at Apple didn't seem like they could help correct for the situation. Instead, they actively opposed the person coming out. So that's a toughie. I highly recommend starting with this Engadget article if you can. If you can click through the Financial Times, read through their account as well. And this is the kind of thing that needs to be voiced more appropriately. When the Me Too movement came out, one of the things that I really hoped would benefit from the Me Too movement, I come out of Hollywood. My first instances of like professional work in my industry were at talent agencies, and then I became a casting director, and I was working with actors and producers and writers and all of these brilliant and vibrant and creative individuals. But then you get to see sort of the background on how all of these projects get made and how money funnels into these different situations and how, you know, the entire operation of Hollywood is sort of built on cycles of abuse. If it's financial abuse, if it's abusing someone's time, or if it's just outright emotionally or physically abusing an individual, what I would have hoped for the Me Too movement was for it to grow. More people telling their stories, more people on the ground, more people to care about the assistant in the mailroom of a talent agency who is not really getting paid what they're worth and has to suffer 20-hour workdays so that millionaires can continue profiting off of their labor. Again, as I get older, I get more and more to the left. Like, just, we're so close to, you know, advocating violently seizing the means of production. When we see the continued impact of these kinds of conversations and how difficult it still is for someone to come out, even in this age where we all have like our own little personal megaphone where we can draw attention to these issues, we need to be doing a better job of listening, and we need to be doing a better job of taking these individuals in these companies to task for poor behavior. And I don't see it. I still see, oh, well, we got rid of that one creep in this one department, so we solved Me Too, But then the entire rest of the apparatus, the entire rest of the machine is still about, like, circle the wagons. If someone reports a manager, we've got to make sure we defend the company's image above the employee who was harmed in this interaction. And that, to me, is what's most disappointing. We could have been growing from this. Instead, we turned it into a punchline, and people are still getting hurt. So we should probably fix that. It sucks. Oh, Dave Burns. Oh, my favorite snarky hot takes. I'm really excited to see the mental gymnastics from tech tubers and Apple stands as to why it's still cool and ethical to buy these products. I want us to be careful. So here's the deal. I mean, Dave, I'm not picking on you. I'm not picking on you like I was Michael Corcoran. Sorry. What we need to be careful with, I got into this great sort of back and forth with someone on the YouTube comments from my Pixel 6a video. Because I say the Pixel 6a is a small brand. The Pixel brand of phones is a small brand. Any rational techie can understand. I mean, we looked up the numbers. I want to say Google has never sold more phones in the history of them making phones. And I want to say year over year, we saw an almost 400% increase in premium sales. So from like the Pixel 4 to the Pixel 5 to the Pixel 6. From the Pixel 5 to the Pixel 6, like a 400% increase. And they are representing about 3% of all smartphone sales in North America. There is no metric by which we would describe the Pixel team as a major player in smartphone manufacturing. So what we need to be really careful with as techies is acting like Google is one thing, Apple is one thing. There's a Mr. Apple, and he goes about and he's responsible for every piece of software and every piece of hardware, and it's just one brain coordinating everything to one singular Apple experience. Apple has a $3 trillion market cap. Apple as a company is bigger than the GDPs of many European countries. Apple is not one thing. It's an amorphous blob of terrible mega corporation sucking up whatever it needs for the resources that it needs to consume. Ditto Google, ditto Amazon, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I can be extremely excited for the tiny little department in Google, in Alphabet, I should say, excuse me, in Alphabet, the tiny little division of Pixel hardware team. The Google hardware team is making some incredible consumer products. I am viscerally disappointed with YouTube and search. They are not playing the same game. They are two tiny little divisions with individual pockets of power and resources under the Alphabet umbrella. And that's what we need to be doing a better job of here. It's okay if you've got to go after some middle managers at Apple. That doesn't paint Apple in a bad light. You would actually make Apple, the giant amorphous blob, Apple Incorporated, look better if they were doing a better job of picking apart those divisions and rooting out those individuals who would make their company look bad instead of circling the wagons to defend the company. To Dave Burns' point there, I want us to be excited about those parts of the mega corporation that we think are doing a good job, because that's the only way we're going to encourage positive conversations and better critical conversations of the rest of the amorphous blob. It was a really, really rambly way to kind of describe all that. Sorry. Yeah, Gary the Fireman beat me to Tim Apple. There's one Mr. Apple. Now remember, he was under oath when he said bullying was not a part of the Apple culture, right? It didn't matter that Apple in the App Store, like, seriously went after WordPress for some of their financial issues and how they were monetizing their own apps and services. Apple, they're just, it's not a part of their culture to be bullies unless something makes Apple look bad, and then they will break you. But again, you know, being under oath and a Senate testimony means nothing. All right, it's 10:20, and I still want to talk about phones and gadgets and stuff. Get into some of the funner conversations in our gadget block here. Just a quick shout out. I won the subreddit, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Top two of last week were my Pixel 6a rant and my Surface Laptop Go 2. But number three, my brother from another mother, TK Bay, with the OnePlus 10T 5G performance, what I like and what I don't, cameras, new gaming features. Definitely catch this video. The number four spot, lots of small details from in-depth tech reviews looking at Android 13, the new Android 13 beta. And number five with some good numbers, Tech Valor, checking out the Pixel 6a versus the Xiaomi Mi 11 selfie camera comparison. We had a real strong week on the subreddit last week, so definitely check them out. reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Aditi Anil saying Juan won in his own subreddit. What a surprise. Guys, I keep saying, if you want this mix or this spread to kind of keep growing and you want it to broaden, then don't let me just win whenever I share the subreddit once and I get all the upvotes. Again, you know, you don't have to wait for me to win the subreddit. You can share someone else's post. Tech Valor did some incredible work looking at the Pixel 6a's fingerprint sensor. Would it have hurt anyone here in this chat to like share her video? I shared her video. It got some great upvotes. So again, if you don't want to see me take number one, number two, or number three spots every week, then there's a way that you can combat that. Tech Valor, yay, I made it. You totally made it. Those videos have been great. So she's done like camera comparisons, fingerprint sensors. She is dug in deep on the Pixel 6a. And if you're not following her channel, you're missing like real world use on the Pixel 6a in almost real time. As she is using the phone, comparing it against other phones and figuring out like what she likes and what she doesn't, she is sharing that almost immediately to YouTube. It is like watching someone explore the phone in almost real time. That's great. That is exactly the kind of coverage that us nerds should be excited about. So reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. So I appreciate that. Dust Adore saying, real quick, thank you, Juan, for covering the difficult stuff that never will be covered in the mainstream tech tuber space. Lots of conversations that I feel a number of us care about, right? I mean, like, I'm not the only one talking about this stuff, but man, it's so much harder to keep finding other people that are kind of consistently talking about this stuff. And Dave Burns, the Pixel 6a is the most engaged in tech YouTube I've been in forever. I genuinely love the coverage. Yeah, I mean, part of my Pixel 6a rant was talking about popularity trends. Like, the peak interest in Pixel 6a is dwarfed by Galaxy or iPhone, but we've got this limited window where we can talk about it. So, of course, a bunch of mega channel YouTubers decided to suck all the air out of the room with their hot takes on the phone. I've got two quick gadget block stories that I want to cover. Sort of zombie brands, if you will. A blast from the past, a return to form, the reanimation of Winamp. Also coming from Ars Technica, this is Andrew Cunningham. Winamp, the best MP3 player of the 1990s, just got a major update. Apparently, this is the first major update for Winamp in 4 years. I thought I had it in the article. Now I can't find it. But I think the last major update was back in 2018. Oh, yeah, here it is. A revised version of the build was released in 2018, and the major version 6 was planned for 2019, but, you know, that didn't really seem to pan out. So if you've been waiting on Winamp 6, You still have a little further to wait, but if you want to play with Winamp 5.9 Release Candidate 1 Build 1999, it's ready to whip the llama's ass. So, that's cool. Then I also got to show this off too, because this one took me by surprise, and I'm not sure where it's really coming from, but... and I liked the title here from gadget.com. This is where I caught it from first. I don't know what Gadget is as a website, but they showed up in my Google article feed. And there we go. Unexpectedly, LG introduced the UltraTab tablet with stylus support and military standard protection 810G drop and shock resistance. From the article, what we know, in general, it's an entry-level tablet but with a few interesting surprises. 10-inch IPS display, resolution of 2000 by 1200, and a refresh rate of 60 hertz, powered by a Snapdragon 680, 4 gigs of RAM, 64 gigs of storage, two cameras, an 8-megapixel main and a 5-megapixel selfie, and it runs on Android 12. But it is packing mil standard 810G shock resistance. So, yeah, it's like a little mid-ranger LG tablet, sort of a zombie portable electronics device from a company that's no longer really making phones and tablets. Around $330, depending on your region and exchange rates and stuff. So an LG tablet exists again. That's kind of cool. And then, because I put it in the title of the podcast, I wanted to pull this up here. Hold on, I gotta just kind of clear my throat here. Sorry, I just caught that from Doulos the Prophet. Hands up if you had Winamp coming back on your 2022 bingo card. I did not. Winamp had one of my favorite Android MP3 players before VLC and USB Audio Player Pro came to Android. There was an Android Winamp APK, and it was really good. This is like early days of Android kind of coming to the United States, like Galaxy S1 kind of era. And I really missed just like, oh, it's Winamp. This is cool. I don't know. Maybe I'll install it. Right now, I just do VLC for everything because I'm lazy. I wanted to pull this up. This is also by way of Engadget. One Mr. John Fingas. I'm not going to do anything major for Samsung Unpacked. There's just nothing coming down the pipe that I'm personally really excited about. I might kind of tweet some reactions to their press conference. Maybe. I don't know. But because it's coming out on the 10th, so what is that? Tomorrow's the 9th. So the Unpacked event's on Wednesday. We'll probably have more to talk about with TK Bay on the Best of Our Week. That'll be our Thursday night stream. We'll chat about Samsung Unpacked then. But John Fingas is just kind of breaking down what we think we already know about Samsung Unpacked in 2 days. Likely going to see the Galaxy Z Fold 4, slightly different aspect ratios to the outer display and the build of the phone. I imagine they're going to find a way to shave a fraction of a millimeter off of the Z Fold 4. Galaxy Z Flip 4, I think, is actually going to be one of their main players. When we talk about the numbers on folding phones, I want to say something like 70% of bendy plastic screens are Galaxy Z Flip devices. Someone please correct me in the comments if you can dig that up. But when I tried looking up like sales numbers, like they were making all this noise. Samsung was like, whoa, our folding phones are selling way better than ever before. The vast majority of Samsung folding phones were Z Flips, like 5-1, something like that. And so then when you try and you crunch the numbers, like every single folding phone that's ever been sold, the vast majority of them have been Z Flips. Consumers, we're talking about average consumers. Consumers are not interested in a square folding tablet that turns into kind of an awkward phone. they are much more interested in a clamshell phone that opens into something that is much more familiar with how they use their phone. Z Flip 4, I think, is going to continue on in that track record, and I think it's going to sell like crazy. I think that phone is going to do very, very well. I would be very surprised as if in 6 months we haven't heard about new sales records on Z Flip. I am critically not interested in the slightest for Z Fold. That is not my speed. I love my Duos. My Duos are incredible hinge tablet beta experiences. I really hope Microsoft doesn't put out a Duo 3 this year. I hope they stick with just the Duo 2 and kind of refine everything for another year next year with a better SoC than an 8 Gen 1. I don't recommend the Duo to a lot of people unless you know you want a folding tablet. Like, that's the game. If you don't know that you want a folding tablet, you should not be buying folding tablet phones with hinges. The Z Flip is the closest we get to having a normal phone that kind of compresses into something that's a little bit more like a makeup compact. So it's not a shock. I don't think it's going to be a surprise. But I think Samsung's going to try and play that game. Galaxy Z series, wow, the sales are off the chart. The numbers are so much better. And like, Z Fold 4 is going to do like middling business, but Z Flip will have set new sales records. But they'll call the whole thing, everybody's just so interested in all of our folding phones. And that's not how this works. They did the same thing, right? Galaxy S22 sales are off the charts. No. Galaxy Note 22 sales are sucking up both Note Fan and Galaxy Ultra Fan sales. So those, you got two whole mini demographics, but Galaxy S22 sales are hot garbage, with millions of phones just sitting on warehouse shelves. And still, I don't think this has gone through yet, but still the rumblings of a potential class action lawsuit in South Korea over how bad the S22 is. But the headline from Samsung, S22 sales are off the charts, except we know that they're not. So Gormlord, again, I feel like it's the novelty and it's the return to something nostalgic. Gormlord writes, I honestly do not understand the appeal of the flip, just an extra step to get to my screen, if you ask me. I don't disagree with you, but I also love to wear a smartwatch. And I feel, in an era where we don't get lots of little communicators anymore, like I've got my Pixel 4a here. It's a tiny little adorable phone. Like I can palm the Galaxy, I can palm the Pixel 4a. I have little hobbit hands. I can't do that with bigger phones. Like if I try and do that with a Pixel 6a, I'm going to break my fingers or the phone's going to come flying out of my grip. If you don't really rely on a notification system like a smartwatch, I actually think the Z Flip 4 makes a lot of sense. It's a pocket smartwatch, right? It's like a pocket watch, but it's smart. And so you just kind of glance at that screen and then you get back on with your day. Glance at the screen, get back on with your day. I wish they could make like a little chain for it. So you could like hook it to a shirt and make it look really like Victorian steampunk futuristic. But you look at it, you get on with your day. And then if something really deserves your attention, you open the screen and you interact with that stuff on the screen. The Z Flip makes a lot of sense to me. I like that idea of a compact. It's like a makeup compact that acts as a gatekeeper to the less important interactions throughout your day. I wear a smartwatch, so I see all of my notifications, and when something really catches my eye, then I'll pick up my phone. But I'm not reaching for my phone on every notification. I hate always on displays constantly distracting me. I'm constantly looking around. Whereas like if I'm writing a document and I look down at my wrist, and I just got a notification from Dave Burns on the Some Gadget Guy Discord, that's a much briefer interaction than trying to handle a phone lock screen. So that to me is the genius of the Z Flip. The Z Flip in my brain makes more sense for average consumers getting into folding phones than folding tablet. Because the problems with a folding tablet, you have a square, bigger screen that shows you less information than your phone screen. And that doesn't make any sense to me. Video plays with enormous letterboxing or pillar boxing, unless it's 4x3. So if you're only watching the Snyder Cut on your Z Fold, then that's the only kinds of films that are really using the screen and giving you a better viewing experience. Z Fold makes way less sense to me, except for a niche or sort of a hobbyist or a very, very early adopter who's into beta testing new products. Z Flip makes a lot more sense to me as a mainstream consumer product. Oh, este bandido. Sorry, I'm Team Moto Razor. Sorry, not sorry. That's okay. It's all right. I think it's fine too. Back to the Engadget article here real quick. So yeah, we're expecting the Z Flip 4 and then also the Galaxy Watch 5 and 5 Pro. I feel like this is going to be a refining year for watches. I don't feel like this stuff is going to be changed up. Excuse me. Man, I got some coffee burps in there. Those are super gross. I don't feel like this is going to be a significant change up from the Galaxy Watch 4. If I'm getting the sort of specs on this correctly, the SoC that's in the Galaxy Watch 4 should also be going to the Pixel Watch, and I don't think the Galaxy Watch 5 is supposed to be getting a different SoC. I think the major change is supposed to be removing the rotating bezel on the Galaxy Watch, but then also adding a larger battery. So according to this article at Engadget, you should expect the same minimal fitness-oriented design as before. Sam Mobile floated a rumor that the wristwatch would have a 10% larger battery than its year-old counterpart. And we're looking for ballpark pricing somewhere around $300 to start, with LTE options going all the way up to $600. So I kind of feel like this is that transition point. We've gone, almost 2 whole years on Wear OS, waiting for Wear OS 3 to really start making it to other devices. And I think the only other Wear OS 3 watch that you can really just go out and buy and have it is that ridiculously expensive Mont Blanc. The Tick Watches. My Tick Watch Ultra just got an update last night, and it was just a bug fix. It wasn't even a new security patch. I mean, I was getting like, oh, could it be, fingers crossed, Wear OS 3? It's not Wear OS 3. But where we're going to see for Tick and for Fossil, for Mobvoi and for Fossil, is that this next generation of watches, I expect we'll have a new SoC from Qualcomm. Last week, we talked about the new smartwatch chip, the W5 Plus Gen 1, whatever it is that they're calling it. And again, it's not going to be a dramatically more powerful watch. All of the big talking points from Qualcomm were, we're making it more power efficient. You're doing something really basic and low level, you're going to get 10% better battery life. If you're trying to use it for step counting, you're going to get 30% better battery life. We don't need more processing power in these portable devices. We need better efficiency, we need better battery life, and we need better optimization for the software on these things. There's nowhere really for a Galaxy Watch to go. What's the issue with the Galaxy Watch? It needs better battery life. Cool, we'll make one with a bigger battery. That's the gig. So I if you're rocking a Galaxy Watch 4, if you're rocking an older Tick Watch, if you're in that kind of era of wristwatch computing, it doesn't seem like the practical operation, the daily interactions, are going to change much. What we're going to be paying for the next year is hopefully extra runtime. Some of the rumors, like with the new Snapdragon, like if you changed nothing on the watch, but you went from the Wear 4100 SoC to the W5 SoC, you should get an extra 20% of runtime. Like, that would be amazing. Like, keeping everything else the same, just give me, you know, an extra afternoon of runtime. Done. Love it. Make that watch. Do it. So I think that's what we're kind of in line here for also. I don't see where Samsung is going to deliver anything radical. They probably don't want to rock the boat with Google, since Google is kind of leaning on Samsung Fab, Samsung's foundry for mobile SoCs. I don't think they'll want to completely nerf and outpace the Pixel Watch, because they'll want it to be a part of the same ecosystem where Samsung gets this sort of preferential treatment from Google to kind of help grease the wheels on this development. I feel like that relationship is a little incestuous. Gormlord, my sundial never dies, suckers. Muted the mic. We'll probably also see some new Galaxy Buds, but I don't know. Is anyone feeling like there's going to be a big surprise? I haven't seen anything where I think we're going to get something surprising. My guess on Z Fold is we're going to get a Z Fold 4. It's going to probably be the same kind of RAM storage configuration, slightly different screen. All of the phone gets substantially more expensive with accessories, and maybe Samsung is able to keep the price at the same tier as last year's. So everyone's going to be like, whoa, Samsung just gave us a whole brand new thing, and they kept the price the same. Isn't that amazing? Which really shouldn't be a radical surprise as their manufacturing costs come down. You know, like, the more Z Folds they make, the better they get at making Z Folds, and the less expensive the Z Fold is to manufacture. But are any of us expecting the Z Fold to maintain its value, and that in 3 months there won't be a ridiculous sale on the Z Fold for like $999? I kind of feel like that's going to be the same play. Gary the Fireman. And one more thing, here's the Galaxy Car. Now remember, if the Z Fold 4 launches and there are any bugs, we have to throw it away. Did you not know this? On pre-release software, there were a couple software bugs on a much older security patch that consumers wouldn't use on the Pixel 6a. So that made the Pixel 6a impossible to recommend. So if there's anything, any gremlins on a folding tablet that costs four times more than the Pixel 6a, then we need to throw away the Z Fold 4 four times harder than we would have thrown away the Pixel 6a. Because that can't happen. If you spend even more on a folding tablet phone, you can't have any bugs. The Pixel 6a can't have any bugs and be recommended. Then we need to make sure that we're keeping everything a buck. I'm just keeping it a buck, yo. That's got to be the response, right? We're all here for that. If the iPhone 14 has a 60 hertz display, we have to make sure everyone knows not to buy that garbage. No one can buy a 60 hertz display in 2022, especially for an $800 phone. Like, that to me would be the worstest tragedy ever, if you had to look at that screen all the time. That perfectly usable, beautiful 60 hertz display, good color, great performance. No games really play sustained above 60 frames per second for any length of time on mobile. Can't do it. Can't do it. Need to have 120 hertz or it hurts your eyes. Ha ha! So I'm here for it. I'm here for all the smoke, right? Because we're going to come down even harder on the market leaders, where millions more customers would have to face those kinds of issues than on the Pixel. Our expectations are properly primed that if we're going to complain this loud about a $450 Pixel, we have to complain twice as loud on an iPhone 14. We have to complain four times louder for an $1,800 Z Fold 4. Totally. That's got to be the way it is. I mean, anything less would be sort of an admission that we're not really reviewing the pixels as much as we are just reinforcing the audience bias of people who already own Samsungs and Apples. Like a Verge article, like a Samsung phone review, the Verge wouldn't go out of their way to trash a Pixel in a Samsung review just to make iPhone and Samsung owners feel better about themselves. That would be, I mean, that would be sort of a misrepresentation or sort of a bias confirmation for that kind of practice. Like they wouldn't do anything like that. So, you know. Well, Gormlord, I mean, I'm glad you brought this up. Gormlord says, but is it a smooth 60 frames per second? There's a difference, of course, because again, you can get yourself a Galaxy A53 with a 120 hertz display that stutters bad navigating the UI, even when the screen is set to 60 hertz. So it doesn't matter. The A53 is the way to go, right? Because it has a 120 hertz display. It can't power 60 hertz reasonably well, but you've got the faster screen. I've got a 144 hertz ultra-wide gaming monitor right here, and it's basically the same if I plug this into an underpowered mini PC, right? It's the same. It's 144 hertz. Doesn't matter that my mini PC can't play Tetris Effect above 30 frames per second. I still have 144 hertz. Am I right? High five. Psh. Oh, I'm all fun and bitter. All right, we got like 15 minutes left before I got to put a pin in this. I just want to kind of share a couple little details and a couple little thoughts as I've kind of been chewing through way too many phones on my desk right now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. I've kind of got about 15 phones in active rotation, trying to keep pace with some of my longer-term coverage on these things, some of the proper reviews that I still haven't finished, and the new, like stuff that there's a phone on my desk that I can't show you right now because it's still under embargo. Pixel 6a, full review coming out on reviews.org. So definitely check out the reviews.org YouTube channel. You're going to see me. You're also going to see Shaka Armstrong. So if you've been a fan of Shaka's work, he's also a regular contributor over on reviews.org. 26-minute video on the Pixel 6a, probably coming out tomorrow or Wednesday. The spoiler, I really like this phone. The counterpoint, I'm super concerned about who should use this really good phone. It is not for everybody. It's a very different conversation than the Pixel 5a. Speaking of, Pixel 5a and Pixel 5 have been aging phenomenally well. I've been kind of poking around and playing with some Android 13 beta stuff. But the newness, again, getting my hands on some more devices running the 8 Plus Gen 1. The Xiaomi 12s Ultra has been rocking my socks. That is an astounding content creation, photography, video maker platform of a phone. And I'm going to be putting out, where is it? Oh, here we go. Vivo X80 Pro versus Xiaomi 12S Ultra. Just a camera comparison. This is hilarious. I started writing a script. I talked about this on Best of Our Week. I started writing a script trying to compare both of these as phones. It was going to be like a holistic back and forth, you know, the best that Vivo has to offer for a photography-focused phone versus the best of Xiaomi. And I got to the camera section, and the camera section by itself was 4,000 words. No, like 3,500 words. So I cut that, and I turned that into just its own separate video. So that's going to be going up on the Patreon probably tomorrow. And then I'm going to have a public version of that going out on Friday. But just a camera showdown of two mega camera-centric devices. The Vivo is one of the top options of the year. The Xiaomi has a radical new camera sensor. I'm stupid excited about this 1-inch Sony IMX989. This image sensor is absolutely incredible. It really is just an evolutionary leap in pocketable photography. But what the Xiaomi can do with brute force hardware, it doesn't win every showdown against what the Vivo can do with some of the most intelligent processing I've ever seen on a phone today. And then I just kind of want to kind of wrap up this little bit here. I've really been enjoying my time with the Vivo. So again, Vivo, the iQOO 9T, this is a cousin phone to the OnePlus 10T. If you catch last week's episode, TK and I had like a fun, silly little mini showdown. We were both being kind of cheeky about it. It wasn't like a serious comparison, but we were having fun pitting the iQOO 9T against the OnePlus 10T because they're cousins. They're very similar devices, but even for an overall similar parts bin, Vivo is trying to accomplish something different on their label than OnePlus is on their label. So, things like performance, I would probably give most of the wins to the OnePlus, but in gaming, you don't have as strict a frame cap. And the iQOO was able to boost gaming frame rates a little higher than what the OnePlus 10 would sort of lock your gaming at. The camera conversation, I definitely have to give the win to the iQOO 9T. The collection of camera sensors on the back of the phone are a little bit better. They're not radically different. They're just a little bit better. But this also has that V1 Plus. So there's a whole separate screen management and camera management co-processor in the phone. And what this phone can do in chewing up image data is like direct pixel comparison. And in fact, it does things like clearing out your HDR buffer way faster than a Pixel can. So really interesting fights back and forth. But I've been digging the 9T. There's a part of me, like, as we see OnePlus kind of getting a bit more absorbed under the Oppo umbrella, I kind of wish we were getting the Vivos just as a label swap. Imagine a OnePlus 10 Pro, which is basically just an X80 Pro. Imagine a OnePlus 10, which is basically just an iQOO 9. I feel like, for me, again, I'm totally doing this again. Like, what would Juan want? Not like really what's best for consumers out there. Like, just gratifying me. It's the me show. Especially with the camera and the performance focus where iQOO products kind of land. If you had to, you know, twist my arm, I really liked the OnePlus 10 Pro. I liked the iQOO 9 Pro better. I feel like if I could have just gotten the iQOO with a OnePlus label on it, that would have made me really happy. That to me, I think, would have been a better phone. So any other questions here? We got about 10 minutes before I want to kind of wrap this up here. Let me just scroll back up through the chat.
Hey, podcast listeners, I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a megapickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious megapickles. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
Oh, Aditya and Nil, can't we all just be kind to one another and all just buy iPhone 14 Pro Maxes? Hashtag peace, love, and harmony. Was it you, Dave? Dave, did you share it on the Discord? There was an article someone wrote. It was another one of these Android blogs. And basically they were saying like, hey, we really have a problem with all of these proprietary charging standards. They were kind of complaining like, you know, a company has invented SuperVOOC, right? So BBK branded phones have super, super fast charging, like 120 watts and higher. And the article, I believe, was trying to say like, well, this is confusing for consumers and it's dangerous. So really what those companies need to do, they invested their own R&D, they invested their own money, but they should really just like let other brands freely license those battery charging technologies. And it's just the laziest let Apple win kind of hot take. And I think it was coming from an Android blog. But, you know, when you look at super, super, super VOOC, this crazy fast charging, I've got an iQOO 9 Pro, 120 watt charging. There are two battery cells so that you're not cooking the phone. You're not really charging one battery cell 120 watts. You're charging two battery cells at 60 watts. This really helps manage power. It keeps the phone running cooler, and it puts a little less wear and tear. It puts a little less strain on the battery to charge the total capacity that quickly. And this article was like, oh yeah, they should just let everyone license it for free. And you're like, yeah, that is such a gimmicky North American, why won't you just let Samsung and Apple benefit from your new technology and let them win? And you're like, yeah, that's exactly what I would have expected from like a North American centric reviewer. Oh, Xiaomi and BBK, they're doing all these crazy new technologies and things. Well, then Apple should pay them the licensing fees for those new technologies. Samsung should license that technology. If Samsung developed something and another company wanted to use it, they give Samsung money to license that technology. So yeah, I was not impressed with that as a hot take. Aditya Nil, now that the Pixel 6a is out, I can finally scout the used markets for a used Pixel 4a. If you can, I mean, I've been legitimately telling people, Pixel 5a, this is a really good window to buy a Pixel 5a. I'm just saying. You'll get more of that in my Pixel review, hopefully coming out tomorrow or Wednesday. Just saying. Aditya Nil. Also, phone under embargo. Juan, draw a pentagram in the air if it's a Samsung. I don't have a Samsung. I've told you publicly. You know, like John Redinger puts out this video, Apple blacklisted me, and everyone's like, oh, he's so brave. Like, we have been telling you for years, Samsung completely tried to nuke Pocket Now. Some of the most punitive, aggressive, angriest PR I've ever had to deal with. I joined shortly after they were put on the poop list at Samsung, and my entire 2 years at Pocket Now was basically spent kissing the ring so that they could rebuild any kind of relationship with Samsung. And as soon as I went back to solo again, Samsung PR wanted nothing to do with me as a reviewer unless I could put them on a major television network in like a market like Los Angeles to only say nice things about their phones. They radio silenced me unless I could mention, oh, and hey, I'm going to be doing a TV media appearance. Oh, hey, we're doing this whole package and presentation with Newegg. Oh, hey, I'm going to be on NBC. Oh, hey, I'm going to be on Fox LA. Only times they would ever have anything to say to me was, oh, you want to make a free commercial for Samsung? Cool. Now we'll reply to your email. It is all rigged. And we've been telling you for years. But that's how brutal Samsung PR is. If you upset Samsung, you won't get the early access, and then you don't make the monies on the YouTubes, and your channel suffers. They know how to squeeze the YouTube algorithm for every penny that they can. It is horrific and disgusting. So I'm not reviewing any Samsung at launch. And I'm just personally less interested in folding phones, bendy plastic screen folding phones. I love dual display. So for what little meager budget I put towards my own purchases for review devices, I am always going to be interested in dual display. I'm always going to be interested in radical camera hardware. And that's kind of the gig that I'm playing right now. Oh, Aditya Anil actually legit asked, what previous gen Pixel would you recommend I pick up? I'm telling everybody, like, Pixel 5a. Like, now is a great window to buy a reduced price Pixel 5a. Make sure it's reduced price. Don't spend anywhere near actual MSRP, but if you get one on a good sale, it is the battery life daily driver champ of the last generation of mid-ranger phones. And it's brilliant. I love the build quality. I love the fingerprint sensor. The cameras are going to be comparable. Performance absolutely suffers. It is a mid-ranger chip. It is not a Tensor. So you are not at the bleeding edge of horsepower or of content creation or of camera tech. But damn, the Pixel 5a is such a good battery life focused mid-ranger phone. Real, real good. Real good. Aditya, you answered my question. You legend. I mean, come on, to be fair, I feel like I'm getting pretty predictable on stuff like that. Hey, can we make Juan rant about something? Here, throw in this question. Gormlord, Samsung acts like that. Gormlord, you should have paid them for the opportunity of talking about their brilliant products. Yeah, it's super gross. It really is. Yeah. Yeah, Gormlord tagging Dave Burns. We need to keep this chat PG. Thank you very much. Samsung is gross, icky doo-doo. I don't understand. I really don't. I mean, people have been talking about this stuff for a while, sort of the undue influence of how PR can kind of ratchet up their own content. And it still seems like this big shock or surprise. I was stoked John Redinger put out his experiences. John Redinger was blacklisted by Apple. He was blacklisted in a completely inappropriate fashion for discussing some of the issues that he had with the iPhone XR at launch. Now, I want that to resonate. At launch, John Redinger bought his own iPhone XR. It was early software. Apparently, he was facing a number of bugs. And Apple blacklisted him for that coverage. So now, do we ever hear about issues with Samsung or Apple phones, especially when the reviewer has spent most of their time using that software pre-release? We do not. So what do we do when a reviewer gets to use a Pixel pre-release? Do they give the Pixel the same consideration as the Samsung? No, because they're not afraid of Pixel PR blacklisting them. But they are terrified of Samsung and Apple PR blacklisting them. Samsung and Apple PR blacklisting your channel will have a catastrophic impact on your ability to be early in the conversation and make money on those videos. So again, I gotta throw some massive props. John Redinger has been blacklisted from Apple. He is a dyed-in-the-wool, loves Apple products, left Techno Buffalo to make his own personal channel, where like one of his first major videos was this video essay and diary about how much he loves Apple products. This entire time, he's been blacklisted from Apple PR. That's what we're dealing with. One of, like, the loudest champions of Apple design and Apple products is blacklisted by the PR company of the channel that he's making that content for. I'm just like, this is the cognitive dissonance. I mean, as much as I love John Redinger, and I had him on, like, when I was trying to do more interviews, I had him on this podcast, and I just want to reach out to him again and be like, bruh. Man, this sounds a little like an abusive relationship, and we know how Apple HR handles allegations of abuse, apparently. Maybe it's okay if you walk away a bit more. But like, yeah, sharing his experiences. Yeah, I was totally blacklisted by Apple PR. This was a terrible look. They wouldn't let me fairly criticize this phone. But you know what? I still love Apple products. I'm just like, man. Oh, we are so thirsty for actual competition, and we just don't even know it. And we don't. And we're letting all of this marketing totally rot our brains. And it's awful. And you bring it up, people act like it's this big shock, this big surprise. Apple did that? Are you sure? Was it like one person at Apple, or is this like something that, you know, has happened to other people? When I bring up like how developers are abused on the Apple App Store, people act like this is like a total shock. They've never heard anything like that before. And you're like, yeah. Because I only really get a couple thousand listens a week on my podcast, and Apple reaches billions of people every day through hundreds of millions of dollars of daily marketing. So if you're hearing it here first, welcome to the club. Take a seat. We've been getting ground under the boot of mega corporations for a couple years now. From LollyDK 1001, here, let me pull this up here. What about the 10T? I don't know in what you are referencing on the OnePlus 10T, but I am very positive on the 10T being a return to form. Here in the United States market, especially, the 10T feels a lot more like a OnePlus 6. You can take an iPhone at $800, a OnePlus 10T at like $650-ish. Again, I don't even remember how much the thing costs. It's around $600. My brain is so warped because of all the import phones that I've been playing with lately. But here locally, you're going to sacrifice a little of the camera performance against the iQOO, but that's still a phenomenal deal. A high performance, top of the line, SoC, pretty screen, fast charging phone. And around $600, that's a great buy. That's a really good deal. And again, it's going to get panned because it's called a OnePlus, and tech reviewers are trying to turn brands like OnePlus and Pixel into the next LG. Like, they won't be happy until those brands fail, because then they can make videos about how they always wanted those brands to succeed. We're going to be so sad that those brands aren't around anymore. When LG left, it just, you know, it left this gaping hole in the smartphone market, and we're all so sad. Except that they have been advocating for the failure of these companies for years now. I personally like the iQOO better as a value proposition, but I doubt there are going to be many markets where the iQOO 9T directly competes against the OnePlus 10T. Like, I can't think of any directly comparable markets where both iQOO and OnePlus are sold in the same price bracket. So I think the 10T is going to be a monster. I will be very anxious to see how it's handled on carriers, because here in the United States, your phone is practically invisible unless you have a really good carrier deal. All right, let me just kind of wrap this up here. Oh, Aditya, I can't even like fully sum up the video. Go to John Redinger's channel. It's one of his more recent videos from the time this podcast was recorded. Aditya writes, John purchased the phone with his own money. I can't imagine how big a bully Apple must be to force him to take down those videos. So I don't think John has ever been, because he was Techno Buffalo and then he went solo. I don't think John has ever been on the list of get free stuff from Apple. That's a very limited list. Very, very few people get early access or hands-on directly from Apple in that kind of way. I think John has always been on the list of John gets invited to events, but he has to buy his own gear. And this is, again, I'm a big fan. I really like John's turn making his channel more of a personal storytelling tech adventure channel rather than I'm an objective reviewer, because we all know that people can't be. If it's a more singular experience, I am not objective. I am flat out telling you, this is what I like and this is what I don't like. And now you have data that you can make up your own mind on how much you might agree with me or disagree with me. And I've always appreciated that in John's commentary, although I had to make fun of him for his Surface commentary back in the day of Windows 8. So go check his video out because it's hilarious. He got to go to the launch event. He bought iPhone XRs. They all had the same terrible bugs at launch. And I believe Apple tried, like he reached out to Apple support and Apple PR, and then they just kind of ghosted him. So they weren't really trying to help him fix the issue. He publishes a video saying, yeah, I'm having these really difficult bugs with the XR. I don't think I can recommend the XR in its current state. John doesn't say never buy the XR, but he is saying like, these are launching kind of rough. You might want to wait till they get patched or until they get fixed. Apple PR then gets back to him, demanding he take the video down because he was so unfair to Apple in not letting Apple work with him to solve his issues. And from there on, he was blacklisted by Apple PR. That's the story. Go listen to John tell the story, because me summing it up, not as bad as John actually telling the story, and especially coming from someone who genuinely has passionately enjoyed Apple products and services. And at the end of the video, he comes back with, but I'm still going to buy Apple gear. Demanded he take a video down. So anytime, and I need your help. Like if you catch the comments on my videos and people are like, but Google just needs to make the phone perfect before they send it to reviewers. I never hear about problems on Samsungs or Apples. That's why. Because if you do talk about problems on Samsungs or Apples, their PR companies are going to try to break you. And it won't be pretty. At some point, I should publish some of my experiences and what it was like starting at Pocket Now with the specter of Samsung actively trying to deny us access to coverage. Pocket Now, like 4 or 5 years ago, that was still like one of the top like sort of organizations in talking about mobile electronics. And Samsung were trying to deny us any kind of access. The games we had to play, the backroom deals we needed to make just to be somewhat current on coverage, and the leverage we needed just to get back into the flow of communication with Samsung PR. Brutal. So if you go through one of my videos, like on that Pixel 6a video, and you see some numbnuts in my comments, I would appreciate the backup. That's why you don't hear about a Samsung launching and having bugs, because that reviewer would never complain about pre-release software on a Samsung, and they'll absolutely eviscerate a OnePlus, a Motorola, a Pixel. It's all rigged. Because you know where the cash is coming from. My channel doesn't really make money. I'm eternally grateful for people who are following me here on the Twitch, and those of you who can, you have the means, you can chip in a buck over on my Patreon, because let me tell you, that is radically eclipsing the amount of money I make on YouTube. The game is real dirty. The game is real ugly. DTNL, we do not want the Pocket Now and Sammy team coming after Huan. I'm still cool with my former coworkers at Pocket Now. I mean, like, you understand, like, they're trying to keep an organization running. The blog got bought out and was put under the same umbrella as XDA, and now I think they're under even new ownership or new management. And I don't begrudge them playing the game. And like, I feel like they've actually pivoted in a way that I sort of appreciate the forwardness of what it is that they're doing better. But, you know, Jaime Rivera is is one of the hardest working men in tech commentary today. Whether or not you're always going to agree with his takes or, you know, like his daily news or anything that he's putting out there. I mean, like, I saw that dude hustle firsthand. I get it. You know, he's got bills to pay. He's got a family. We're all a part of this apparatus and this machine, and we're on varying sides of the line between affiliate marketing and PR and influencing versus journalistic practices. The lines are not clearly drawn. So I don't have any ill will on the Pocket Now side. I was the worst possible fit for what Pocket Now needed after Michael Fisher left. I mean, like, looking back in hindsight, I was definitely not the voice that Pocket Now viewers really wanted to follow Michael Fisher. Fine. It took me 2 years to kind of figure it out, but in those 2 years, I did help resuscitate the relationship with Samsung. My beef is with PR on the other side of the fence, and how blatantly obvious they have become in trying to manipulate my hobbies conversations. So that's where I'm going to get real pissy. Oh, yeah, dude, seriously, all the respect. Aditya saying, Jaime is nothing short of a machine. His work ethic is borderline God tier. And he's incredible at what he does. All the love for that crew. Absolutely. I have, again, my being a not good fit for that organization speaks nothing about the people that I actually worked with. Hands down. that's a terrible joke at DT. I'm not even going to read it on air. So we've definitely gone long. My voice is failing. It is actively falling apart. Yeah, Rico Man. I mean, again, I feel like if we can't laugh about this kind of stuff now, Rico Man writes, I remember you joining Pocket Now. I wasn't the biggest fan at the start. Like, yeah, they needed someone to fill that hole that Michael Fisher left. And I had the ability to at least cut a video from start to finish without complete top to bottom training. That was it. They saw that I was doing a whole bunch of camera stuff and that I was really into audio tech, and they thought, like, hey, this could be like kind of a cool transition for the channel. Pocket Now viewers did not want that. They were not interested in that at all. So it was a terrible fit for the both of us. That was 2 years of the most stressful, out of character conversations, not really ever being able to share my real thoughts on products, always having to fit into the sort of review structure, but like we all have to agree on the scoring. So I'm writing this review, but the conclusion has to match up with everybody else on the team. And I don't work that way well. I'm not a very agreeable person, if you haven't noticed. But Rico Man, I appreciate it. He's like the Pocket Now podcast was sort of the only place where I could really let my hair down. It's tough. It's tough really grinding what goes on in this industry right now. I think it's why so many of us, like the conversations that TK and I have had on trying to find fun ways to pivot, what other things that we can talk about, other ways that we can draw people into this experience, and ways that we can bring sort of a wider audience, cast a wider net when we want to talk about the fun stuff. It's tough. I mean, this stuff is changing daily and we're facing opposition from these giant corporations, these algorithm machines, and kind of pushback from people that think they know what they're talking about. Oof, excuse me. So it's pretty hairy. It really is tough. Oh, Svetikus, that was the golden age too. Your Huawei coverage at Pocket Now is what got me to love your real reviews. Man, that was like the one major critical success that I had was the Huawei P9. I still like come back, oof, goosebumps, that was such a great phone. And I did the real review and it got like almost a million hits in like a matter of months. And that was the only thing that kind of saved me for a while. But then shortly after that, I want to say it was like the HTC 10. I did a camera review on the HTC 10 and it did like middling performance. And we had this like serious sit down at Pocket Now and you're like, well, maybe we should only do camera reviews on Samsungs and iPhones. And like, oh, I think my time here is quickly coming to a close. my feelings on these are like, you still have to eat your vegetables. If the Samsung and Apple videos score really well and we make a ton of money on those, then those videos subsidize our coverage on Motorola and HTC and LG and all of the smaller brands. But from their perspective, it's like every video needs to be making similar money. And I couldn't speak that language. So it was definitely the beginning of my end at Pocket Now. So, tons of stuff coming out. Major video first for the Patreon, Vivo versus Xiaomi mega camera comparison, reviews.org. Check out the reviews.org YouTube channel. We're going to have a Pixel 6a review coming out soon. I'm really hoping it's going up tomorrow afternoon. Fingers crossed. I'll double check with them and I'll be sharing it on my own social media, but my Pixel 6a review will not be on my own personal channel. IQ9T stuff coming out, a phone under embargo coming out relatively soon. I probably shouldn't have said that out loud. TK Bay and I streaming on Thursday. And then I also just want to send that shout out. I very much enjoy catching some of the other streams, on channels and a lot of channels that are represented on the Glowing Rectangle subreddit. But tomorrow is Gadget Goddess. Kimmy is going to be doing a stream. Wednesday is Eric at Easy Computer Solutions. Thursday, I think Ike Talks Tech is going to be doing a stream. I don't know if Tech King Mike is back into the streaming or not. I really like Mike's style, so I hope he's able to find kind of a return to a regular stream schedule. Friday is LaShawn for the Ignant Hours. That's not as much a tech conversation as it is a bunch of techies kind of blown off steam from the week. Thursday night, TK Bay and I, Best of Our Week. Saturday is TK Bay's standalone stream, so definitely check out his Saturday stream. Sunday is El Jefe Reviews. Again, my audio brother from another mother, which we've got to have him on. I've got to follow up with TK. We've got to do a standalone stream with Jeff on earbuds and audio gear because there's just been so much out, especially like through the summer and getting back into school. Like the earbud scene has absolutely exploded. So there's like a whole week of crazy great tech commentary and coverage coming out, and it all needs your support. So again, I'm preaching to the choir for everyone here, but thank you so much for tuning in. Help all of these other channels out. Barry Johnson, TK Bay, Gadget Goddess, Ike Talks Tech, Easy Computer Solutions. Also, the regular shout-outs for other people that are featured on the subreddit. Tech Potato? Dr. Ian has been breaking down some of the most exciting news in the semiconductor industry that I've ever seen. Like a couple weeks back, he put out a breakdown on the new Threadripper. And now that new Threadripper is just now getting into the hands of Gamers Nexus and Hardware Unboxed. He had like the scoop on this thing weeks ahead. If you're not following Dr. Ian's commentary on SoC and CPU and GPU designs, you're really missing out. Gary Explains, a brilliant channel, just putting together great commentary on really learning high-level techie stuff. I mentioned Barry Johnson, Engineer Reacts. I've really been digging his channel growing and that style, that vibe that he puts behind his content. There was one other that I... Oh, Hugh Jeffries! Hugh Jeffries has become yet another one of my absolute favorite channels to check out. Not because he does phone destruction porn. He does some of the best teardowns this side of iFixit. And he just recently put out a video on the Nothing phone and how challenging a phone it was to disassemble. That video is expert level production. The commentary, the conclusions, the information, how informed he is at taking apart a phone, swapping pieces, seeing what's repairable, what's not repairable. If you're not following Hugh Jeffries, you're really missing out. And then also, I've just been kind of trolling through the archive of videos over at Tech Tablets. Just so many absolutely stunning, informative, smart, well-produced content out there. We don't want this conversation to be totally locked up by a YouTube algorithm with millions of channel subscribers that are just putting out lazy hot takes to to make us rage watch their videos. As much as you can, if someone is playing that game, ignore them and spend your time on a better channel. It's the real deal. This stuff is legit. And I implore you, patch these tech channels, tell your family and friends about Netflix games, and I'll catch you back here next week for another episode of the SDG QA podcast. Be safe, take care, and as always, as temperatures are still high, as the world is still facing numerous challenges, the economy is a scary thing to pay attention to, please take care of yourself so that you can continue to take care of others. I'll catch you back here next week. I love y'all. Be well.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.